The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dream.
All right, welcome to it again, The Producers Podcast. Today, two voice talents that do have backgrounds and plenty of other things. But as I've mentioned over the course of the last few months, maybe even up to a year, I've been striving to do more event episodes. So, you know, when I started the podcast, I just wanted to talk to people I respected. You know, anyone, a producer in really any cool market, any market that I just thought was good. And I will still do those, do not get me wrong. But I also want to keep the focus on creating episodes that possibly you can't hear anywhere else. For example, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure you won't hear an interview that includes both David Wartnamy and Howard Ritchie. For me, it was a big deal. I loved having these guys on together. Of course, for me being in Dallas, Texas, and them being in the UK in two completely separate parts of the UK, technically, it actually worked out pretty well, to be honest. There's always the delay, but, you know, you clean that up in post, and then I'm a bumbling idiot anyway, so, you know, what's the difference? So anyway, expect that interview coming up here in moments, and again, I wanted to thank those guys for their time. If you're not aware of who they are, I just wanted to do a quick intro about who they are. And again, this is just, you know, I haven't written anything down off the top of my head, some short bullets, but then go look them up. Howard Ritchie is the extremely famous voice of Capital FM, Capital Networks, one of, you know, and I think the argument could be made, the most powerful CHR brand in the world. I don't know if that's true, but it's definitely in the top five. And Howard is, to me, such an integral part of that brand being what it is. It was just really cool to talk to him. Anyway, Howard is the voice of many, many properties throughout the world, all over Europe, down in Australia. There's an extremely good chance that even if you're an American and you've never really spent time paying attention to European radio, you've still heard the guy. Very unique sound. And then David Wartnamy, you know, all of that stuff I just said can essentially translate over to Dave as well. And Dave is actually the one I met in person when I saw him do his presentation at the Imaging Days 2014, the first Imaging Days. That's, you know, I had already known him. We had emailed. And when he kind of came up to me and said, "Hey, you know, it's David Wartnamy. We've talked before." I'm like, "Oh, why you?" And then I saw his presentation. I'm like, "Oh, I'm getting that dude on the podcast." And then when they both were willing to, you know, join the show together, yeah, I'm just like, "All right, this is going to be a big one." Anyway, David, the voice of the Heart Network. So essentially, you've got global media in the UK with their massive networks. Chris Nickel, by the way, previous guest on the show, gave me the tour of the, is it seven floors? I think their building is seven or eight floors, possibly. They have XFM down low, the Heart Network. They have Capital. I'm not going to go into all that. David is the voice of Heart and the Heart Network. Massive, massive brand over there in Europe and certainly the UK. It's possible. I didn't look it up, as I mentioned, but I think it's the most listened to brand, if not network, if not station, in the UK. I'd have to be double checked on that. But anyway, as I said, Howard, extremely big time Capital. Everybody knows that. David, Heart and Heart Network. But David also does many other things. I first heard him on CNN International. I thought, "Oh, that's a solid sounding dude." Next day, I meet that guy in Amsterdam. So anyway, I think I should dive in now. I think I've introed enough. Let's hear David's demo first. I'm just going to play you a 30-second nugget, and then I will move immediately into Howard. You will definitely be able to tell the difference between the two talent. And on my site, on the page for this podcast, you'll see links to their websites, so please go and hear more. They have lots of great demos up there, and again, I very much appreciate their time. Here is David Wartnamy and Howard Ritchie.
World politics, today's issues, and all the breaking news. Wolf starts Monday, only on CNN.
Sydney's KISS 106.5 KROQ K-Rock.
If you thought you knew the land down under, Think Again, Australia with Simon Reeve starts Tuesday, 2nd of July on BBC Knowledge.
Your new radio station, Heart, is coming. 30, 20, 10. Heart. Heart.
Turn it up. Hit music. Capital.
In 10 seconds. You make your husband angry.
Who directed and created the Star Wars movies?
Oh my God, my husband's going to kill me. Pass.
In 25 seconds, you're making everyone angry.
What is 7 minus 3?
No idea.
In 40 seconds, you're saying, oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
One more time.
Oh my God. Put your money where
your mouth is. Kyle and Jackie O's Pop Quiz.
Who came here for a party today?
At Capital. We are famous for having the biggest balls in the world. So this summer, we're throwing our biggest ball ever. The most iconic venue on the planet.
80,000 people.
It's back.
Summertime Ball!
Capital Summertime Ball with Vodafone.
And I will introduce two of my favorite voices from across the pond. Two of my favorite on earth, to be totally honest, because I love all of the work that they do. I've now met them both. David, I met in person. Howard, hopefully someday to meet you in person. But without further ado, David Wartenby and Howard Ritchie, thank you both for joining me.
Thank you very much for having us, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan. Hello.
So, right out of the gate, I think I'll be able to clean everything up in post, but people should know we are connecting three parts of planet Earth, although both of you are actually relatively close to each other. But, of course, I'm sitting here in Dallas. Howard, you'll have to tell me in just a second about the actual place that you are. I believe I heard the term beach house or country house. Did I hear country house?
That's what I call it.
Okay.
It's in more of a field, I would say.
Yeah, what is that?
Some people in America say that it's quite a luxury place, but it's just quiet. Everyone walks around in wellies, drives Land Rovers. It's very near to the West Country.
Have you ever seen that hideous film, The Holiday?
Is that the house she stayed in?
Yeah, it's that part of the world.
Howard, can you confirm that you live in The Holiday?
I can confirm that wholeheartedly. Admitted.
Have you got close to Cameron Diaz at any point in your life?
Very many times.
Well done.
Excellent.
You probably have, haven't you? You've done TV shows and things, radio shows, where you may well have interviewed a relatively famous movie star.
I have. I actually got told off by the very famous Mel B now. Oh, she's quite famous. Is she famous in the States now? Because she's very famous in Australia and in England again for some reason.
She's doing the morning show over there, right, in Sydney?
Yeah.
She's part of the show that took over for
Kyle and Jackie O.
It's catching, clearly, because Emma Bunton does a bit on Hearts, the big network over here.
Yeah, they're all still working. So Howard's in his field house. David, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from the Chiswick-Acton border, which is part of West London. In my little home studio, in the cot room, as the estate agent described it, a room that was supposedly the fourth bedroom, but it's about a metre and a half by a metre and a half.
Do you know how large it really is, Ryan?
I don't.
It's 1,000 square foot in that room where he is. He has millions of pounds worth of recording equipment.
Equipment and gear.
And there are women walking around all and sundry, bringing him items.
Well, I wouldn't expect it any other way. I actually would expect that out of the both of you. I would hope for that.
Yeah.
Well, let's take it back to the world of voice, since some people listening will appreciate that. You know, in a nutshell, and I guess, Howard, why don't I start with you? Let's just literally start by telling people what it is you do every day. And you can be as wide, expansive as you want, or as detailed as you want.
Well, I suppose very much like yours, Ryan, really, I suppose. We get our scripts and we go and read them. And then in between, we do more, and then in between we perhaps do some meetings or some businesses, and I'm doing audiobooks at the moment, so that takes up an incredible amount of time, actually.
Oh, wow.
It takes a very long time, and it's very different because it's like acting, you know. It's complete, well, I suppose actually imaging is acting really too, so.
Sure.
And then, you know, there's some gym and there's some yoga and just like a normal. We don't all hang out in these trendy venues and bars. And in fact, you know, I know Dave for a fact, and I both quite avidly avoid that kind of lifestyle. So we are just ordinary people, really, with a small passion for doing what we do.
I'd love to get into the audiobooks in a bit. And David, I'm going to jump into your side here. But you made that pretty blasé. But I'm curious, how many hours of your day are spent literally chained to the microphone? And then how much time do you have to either get out and do sessions externally or, as you said, take meetings, do business, do personal things other than that?
Well, that depends on the workload. As you know, sometimes you are spending half your time traveling from one place to another, and you may just do 20 minutes, but it's taking you 2 hours to get in and out of the city that you're recording in. Other times you might have to fly to a different continent in order to meet someone to do a deal, which means that you'll only actually do an hour a week. I don't mean to come across blasé. I just want to try and sort of have an element of humility, I think, because, you know, I think that it's a very ordinary job. I think, how many hours? Wow. Well, Dave will know because he's done quite a lot of telly as well. If you're doing television, it does take up an enormous amount of the day, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 hours. Certainly with continuity, you'll be there 12, 13, 14 hours. On an easy week when there isn't much going on, I would say, I don't know, maybe 10, 20 hours, I suppose.
I've watched, in fact, David, I'll move over to you now. I want to hear basically what your setup is, you know, your daily routine, what it is that you do. Then let's get a little bit more into those sessions and how they work. But start, David, with what you got going on.
It's much the same as Howard. They're probably less traveling. The vast majority of my stuff is done from home. If I can find some discipline in my day, or discipline in my behaviour, I should really get out of the coffee shop reading the newspaper and or at least jump online and start looking for companies that might need a voiceover. Because I got some regular gigs, but I wouldn't say the day is filled.
Sure.
The majority of days are pretty empty, but they needn't be empty if you can sort of drive your own business forward. But motivation is tough when you work from home. So I find 9 to 5 doesn't exist. There are these huge bursts of work that take place and then total lulls of nothing. And this can all happen in 1 week. Sometimes I don't really get round to starting my day until 3 in the afternoon and there won't have been any voiceovers at all. Then 2 or 3 of those will come in. I'll suddenly sort of wake up, get into gear. And before you know it, I've updated my website and done a few other odds and sods. And it's about 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. Very ill-disciplined. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. And one of the things that causes that, I think, are the 10 shifts a week voicing continuity for Channel 5. And they are long and late shifts. So they sort of knock me out of sync. So, yeah, I mean, I need to grow up a bit. I don't really have a huge amount of discipline. And working from home, there's no one to instill it.
That's something that I think it's good to bring it up. We'll get over to the TV sessions in a minute. But, you know, when the person works from home, and there's a lot of people in our field that do that. And I also suspect there's a time in which, let's say you're starting out or you've built your business, but you get to a point where your income, it makes you comfortable. Then there's got to be some other factor that keeps you motivated to just keep building. In other words, you hit X dollars a year and all right, cool. You know, it's steady. I'm good. I'm happy. But look at this. I can take 3 days off in a row. Nothing's coming in. Why should I find more work? So, and maybe Howard, you can answer this also after David, but what are some tricks or ways to keep yourself ultra motivated and to keep yourself building things up?
I think I put the hours in. I mean, I think I put like minimum 30 hours and sometimes 40 hours a week in, but they just come in a bit of a strange form. They're intense at different parts of the day. Those lulls should be used for jumping online, updating the website, finding those corporate voiceover companies, because a lot of what we do isn't the sexy stuff that an agent might send you. A lot of my bread and butter income is stuff that I might source myself. Mm-hmm. So just got to keep on sourcing it. It's really sporadic. It's weird.
And Howard, if you don't mind, obviously talk about what motivates you, but also is that true for you or have you found yourself in a position where you literally don't want any more work, perhaps? I don't know.
Dave is such a nice person. And in fact, in such a competitive industry, Dave is someone who I absolutely genuinely have a great deal of affection for.
Did you have to say I'm a very nice person because I came over as a complete arse just then in my last answer?
No.
sounded like you were apologising for whatever spewed from my face.
No, my agent told me to write it down before the interview and make sure that... No.
He has to say it twice, contract, yeah.
I was going to say that it's actually quite empowering that you go to a coffee shop and read the paper because that makes you more worldly than other people.
Well, that so did sound quite sophisticated,
that's not a bad,
didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. You're very worldly. Yeah. You know what's going on, you know? I'm going to agree and say that this profession, if you can call it that, is the most sporadic. What was the word you used, Dave?
There's a degree of instability in it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Instability.
It's closer to being a cab driver, really.
Yeah.
Every now and again, you get a crack, you get an airport job.
I'll give I'll give you a couple of examples.
Or every now and again, you get loads and loads of little local jobs.
I'd agree with that. There's a couple of points, actually, before we go on to motivation, that was the original question. But one of the things that I've found has alarmed me for the last 10 or so years is just how, when you go in a studio and you do something for someone else, they dismiss you as if you weren't there 5 minutes ago. And that really illustrates what Dave is saying. And you walk back out into a busy London street and you're alone. And the feeling of being cut off from the connection to anything is very unusual.
A little unnerving. Hey, everything's all right. This isn't one big moan, but it's a bit freaky on the side, is where I put it.
Yeah, I've got used to that now, in fact. And now, if I go in a studio and I do something and they say, thanks, and then they don't even look, and I'm back out alone again. I've done so many now, I'm like... Well, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to go in this building that I went into last week and I'm going to do the three lines or four lines that I did for whatever commercial, this and that again. But you know this, Ryan, because I've looked at your work. You've got tons of commercials on there. So you, I don't know if it's the same in America, but they're very busy and they're very getting on with everything. So I think what Dave is saying, and also the transient nature of the self-employed world, both myself and Dave are broadcasters and are DJs. So we've had this self-employed lifestyle always. However, what I would say is that I suspect when Dave was a presenter that there was a different sense of being cut off or this feeling of...
Yeah, you kind of... There's a bit more office time, isn't there? It's there's a little bit more interaction in that
different
way.
Kind of instability.
A steady job that sort of slots into a relatively 9-to-5 existence, but you never know when... You're out on your ear.
There's a great tweet from probably one of the highest TV voice earners at the moment. And he said something like, on his tweet, he said something like, if you're a professional voiceover, don't try and make conversation. And I thought, actually, I found that quite helpful. I thought it was quite a malevolent sort of tweet. As if,
don't try and make conversation in the voice session.
Yeah.
Because people are just trying to get on with their jobs.
Yeah. I agree with that, that they got things to do and so have we. And going back to what you were saying about the coffee shop mentality, I can relate to that too. But what I try and do is take control, and in that time I've written books and so on.
You've written books?
Yeah.
I need to do some more research into that.
Yes, you do.
I shall do that when this interview is over.
I actually didn't... I saw your name on something, but I didn't know you had so many different types. I mean, are you literally, you know, if people go to Amazon, are they going to see a lot of work from you there?
No, in fact, I'm thinking of relaunching one or two of the books with my own name, but I'll be honest, I'm a bit nervous of doing that for the reasons that I think it's important to remain steadfast in your personal brand and what you do.
Sure.
And I think the whole author thing for me is going to be, you know, when things start to slow down, I've got something that I can turn around and go, well, I've been practicing for 10 years on this, so I can relaunch all of these books and put my name on them, and hopefully one or two people that have respected anything I've done in the past might go, actually, I might read his book.
That kind of sums it up, doesn't it? The fact that in parallel to your existing career, it's probably healthy to be permanently preparing for when you don't get any more work.
I think it's interesting that you kind of bring up the whole muddying the waters of your brand, you know, like, for example, the Howard Ritchie voiceover brand. We talk about that on this podcast from time to time. Should you try and be good at many things, or is it perhaps better to be great at one thing? And I think there's actually good arguments on both sides of that coin, but maybe you both could speak to that a little bit more in depth. Or if you've even put real thought into that, or perhaps you're just doing what you do, and if it so happens that you became really good at one thing, or maybe you're really good at a lot of things.
I think I'm really good at one thing.
Let me cut you just for a second. Let me cut it off for a minute and say, just in the world of voiceover, would you say that you like to focus? I mean, like, I know you for, actually, I think the reads are probably similar, but definitely your CNN International, I forget what it's actually called, but I watched so much of it when I was over there, and then I see it in airports. Anyway, but also, of course, Heart. And I think those reads aren't a huge departure from each other. Would you say that you actually really like to get ultra-focused on kind of one delivery and be great at it? Or is that not true? And you still would rather be known as a guy who can do rock and CHR and...
Purely in the world of imaging and radio and stuff like that, I'd like to think that I've got enough versatility to do a few different styles of voice. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Whether I get chosen to do them is a different matter because imaging changes. I think I can do that CHR stuff still, but it's got to be that uber cool interpretation, which is not necessarily the most human way to speak. And a lot of brands these days, especially in the UK, will be, or from my experience in the UK, will be avoiding a monotone, uber cool rock delivery that you might have heard midway through the 90s or early in the 2000s.
We want more
to go
natural
for something that's much
days.
More natural and much more real. So at which point, well, I'm playing to my strengths and doing kind of what I do best. And Heart and CNN are probably closer to each other in that way. There is a certain stern, newsy edge that I try and give the CNN stuff, and there's a warmer smile on Heart, but these stations go through phases and look for change and look to refresh, and so you can tweak the energy in your voice to a degree, but ultimately, you know, one has to be suitable for the job, and if one is, just sound as real as possible. But then again, it's imaging, it's not that real. Some of the sentences on Absolute Radio are long and, you could say, a little bit more crafty and creative. Yeah, the stuff I do for Heart is quite snappy and to the point, doesn't beat around the bush. And ultimately, there's only so much character you can put into that. You just want to sound rich and cut through.
Sure. And Howard, let me jump over to you on this and talk about, I mean, you already sort of brought it up, the whole, do you want to muddy your brand or do you want to change what you are and you want to maybe protect that a little bit? Do you consciously focus on, you know, a certain area of the voiceover world that you want to be great at? Or do you still feel like I mean, you mentioned audiobooks already, so you're obviously still stretching your legs. Or do you feel like it's important to be good at a lot of things?
When I say about brand, what I'm trying to say is that everybody that's on the internet is a reflection of what they post on the social network, of how their website looks.
Sure.
I remember once when I said to a manager of mine in a club, I said something about the brand, and he just literally laughed in my face. And he said, "What, you're a brand? Is that what you're saying? You're a brand?" And I went, no, that's not what I meant. And actually, I realized how ridiculous that sounded. Then several years later, Clive Dickens, who was a big guy in UK radio and is now the chief digital officer at Seven West Media. And he did a video recently, having spoken at a conference, to say that everything we do is about our own brand. And I have two schools of thought about that, because there are some voiceovers who don't go along that big artwork brand, and there are others that do. Some work by having a very, very insignificant image, and others work by having an expensive, hard-to-get image. And I think that bottom line is, rather than sound arrogant, I think we are running a business. And we have to understand that anything you do that is perceived by, purchased by, or represented by anybody else is a brand. And actually, Dave was talking about Heart, and obviously in my case with Capital, I would be daft if I didn't treat myself like a proper professional business, if I was representing possibly one of the most powerful radio brands in the United Kingdom, if I didn't care or take some note about my acumen and about how I conducted myself. I think that would be quite foolish and might land me in some difficult water. Other clients that I've had have sort of seemed to welcome to the way that I market myself. Some people say, oh, it's a bit arrogant. And I go, well, yeah, but so's BMW and you'll buy one. It's a very interesting, because Dave, I've seen Dave's marketing over the years, and he's gone from one to the other. Sometimes he's big and bold and arrogant in his attitude toward marketing. I use that word very, very loosely and with love. And other times he's very laid back and small and like, you know, come get it, whatever you want to do. I don't need to try anything. And I do the same.
Go through phases of... Yeah. Of enthusiasm for updating websites,
yeah,
mainly.
Yeah,
but when you start something like that, you want it to look good. And before you know it, even though you're an individual, you've started creating something that looks like a brand. And you have to start thinking about... It's mainly about reminding people that you exist.
Right.
I think every voiceover or anybody who provides a service has to just remind people that they exist, because a producer will think, oh, so-and-so would be great for that job, but they've got to remember that that person's even on the scene with so many different voices to choose from. Yeah, but you sort of don't want to be in people's faces either. So
That's the difficult one.
I've gone through phases of sending weekly availability. Oh, no, that's just really annoying. I work with these people. Why do I need to remind them that, you know, every Monday morning that I'm around for work? And then I... dropped off delivering availability for, I think it was about 3 years. And I noticed a reduction in income.
Well, it's funny because I've done the same for the similar reasons of not wanting to be an arse. And I've not actually seen anything. So I've actually thought, well, my cost per acquisition seems to have been a complete waste of time. So in terms of marketing, you know, that they say that, you know, 50% of marketing is a waste of money. The thing is, we never really know which 50% has been the waste. And I think that I'm very funny about marketing, and having had some sort of marketing in my background and my training, I'm very sort of like, oh God. And actually it's quite funny, because when you market any product, you have to take into consideration who the product is and who the recipient is and what their ego is. Because if you market a product incorrectly, you can insult their ego or you can insult their belief system. And all you've done is drop them an email, or you've sent a flyer out, or you've sent out a, you know, a copy of your demo, and you wind them up. And that sort of made me think, okay, I need to think about this carefully. And certainly...
It's a bit of an imprecise science, isn't it, as well? Because it might be just that Monday morning where somebody just sees one too many emails.
I also think that because Capital is a very number one marketing genius, possibly... in the world as a radio brand, with their attitude to marketing and how they create these incredible revenue streams and what they do with their radio stations, they are pretty much the best at it. And if you're representing that brand, I think that, and certainly you've got a contract with lots of little clauses on it, I think you have to sort of, in a way, represent who you are working with. It's a bit like, I suppose, if you worked for an Audi dealership, and then you went in on your day off and you were wearing joggers and one of the customers saw you. They'd probably be a bit disappointed, I think.
When you're a station voice, you do become the brand. If that station is networked across the country, you have to... Well, I've learned this the hard way, really. Sometimes I've voiced jobs, commercial jobs that appeared on the stations that I have been station voice of.
Right.
And you can see why it's wound the station up. My sort of track record is basically I make this level of misjudgment once every couple of years, and I'll have to call up the client and go, do you know what? This hasn't worked out because it's just sounding too messy on air. And as a result, I voice less commercials because I am station voice of a network that's across the country and where there's a good chance whoever you voice a commercial for, it might end up on this station. I've had to learn to be careful about the work I do accept. Not because that brand might be dodgy, but just because it ends up sounding messy on air.
I agree. I think that I've been in two similar situations. One was a radio station in Scotland that asked me to do a campaign for a pop music event. Now, because my main capital is in Scotland, I just said no. My agent was fuming. Why? This, you know, the money's fantastic. It's great. It's an opportunity for you to be heard by somebody else. And I said, I cannot run the risk of being heard on a commercial which sounds remarkably like something that the competition, i.e. Capital, would do, and
right.
Me to have that conversation. It was just a conversation I didn't want to have. And then somebody else, you know, they call that fear, call that sensible, call that whatever you want. But there was another thing that was a national campaign, and it was a product. And I really wanted to do it. And I took a look at it and thought, that's going to not sound right. And as a as Dave said, it's a responsibility I had to take without even asking, because I thought I could ask and it's not in my contract, and they could say, yes, of course, you can voice that, thanks for asking. Then I would hear my voice on this product potentially next to something else. And then it comes down to a perception of value.
Let me take a shot here and pull us out of, I mean, this is great. I think we've literally officially gotten through question one of my list.
It's terrible, isn't it? We've given you so much amazing content.
Let me take us over here to like the more of the nuts and bolts, because I know a lot of people listening are going to be very curious. And I know it works different in like the UK versus the US, for example. But you guys are both voices on two of the largest brands in all of Europe, actually, but certainly the UK, Capital for Howard, Heart for Dave, as we've already mentioned. You also are voice of monster brands in Australia. So I'm curious, as far as get into the real nuts and bolts of the way the system works there. Are you ever going in and doing sessions live? Do you ever connect live but get to record from your home studio? Are you just firing off MP3s randomly throughout the day? How does it actually work if they need a session done with you? And maybe David will start with you and Heart.
Well, I'm available every day for Heart if they require. I have two fixed sessions a week, which are done via ISDN in the main. But to get out of the house and to see some people that I've been working with for years and that I love, and to give them a big hug and to annoy them with my stories, I'll pop
in. And get some free coffee, maybe.
The guys that took over this radio station spent a lot of money making it look rather sexy, aesthetically. It is like a giant coffee shop.
I've been there. It's amazing. And then after seeing everything, including the basement studio for XFM, then they're like, oh, maybe we should show you the roof now. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. with that skyline view. It's all very showbiz. It's not quite as good as Midnight Caller, but it's close. So yeah, I'll pop in and do a session. Usually we'll tie that in with big stuff. If there's a refresh that's required on the main imaging lines, or they've got a big competition going on. So I'll try and go in. Well, I've been a bit crap over the course of the last couple of months, but I try and go in once a month at least. Sometimes if there's a little thing that needs fixing, a quick promo, or we missed something out in a session, I'll quite happily send a WAV. Not sending MP3s these days. They seem to have gone out the window because WeTransfer is quite phenomenal. In fact, I don't understand how that service is being provided for me for free. I'm not giving anybody any ideas, but I rinse that thing for data and it is incredibly reliable, apart from when it sometimes sticks in the middle. And so everybody gets themselves a nice juicy WAV these days. How long's ISDN going to last, eh, in the face of that competition?
Actually, let me pause, because I know we talk about this often on this show. You mentioned ISDN. You said you do sessions. How many ISDN sessions would you say you do a week? And for example, is CNN all ISDN, or any of your clients all or only ISDN?
CNN's not ISDN. CNN is directed over the phone, and I voice it here. They'll send me a quick time. Sometimes they'll send me a quick time with the voice removed. Sometimes they've got it on there. It gives me a flavor of the music. I might play in the background, I might not, but you get a rough idea of the energy. There's a pretty secure sound to my CNN delivery. Occasionally, it'll go low and moody if we're doing a piece, I don't know, where a correspondent has popped into a war zone for a while and popped back out again. And so we'll try and make it a bit more filmic, a little bit more low register. On occasion, basically, because I'm just a bit of a geek, I might send CNN a couple of treatments. So if they want, they can take a thinned out element. There was one for Benghazi about 18 months ago, where the producer had an idea for a piece that sounded like it was on an army radio, or it was a bit more covert. And I said, well, here we go. Well, let's do some thinning out here and squash it to buggery, and it could sound quite good. And then ended up sticking that on air. So it's quite nice to have a bit of an impact into the creative process, because, you know, I used to be an imaging producer myself. Don't get many opportunities to do it these days. So it's quite nice to show off occasionally, you know?
So, yeah, so real
that's
quick.
That. But
Real quick on the ISDN, though, how many sessions would you say you do a week? And do you think ISDN is eventually going to die? Do you think it can never die? What's your thoughts on
that? It's kind of on its way out, but it's a bit weird that it is still the only way you can have a decent conversation. It might be low bitrate and all that, but ultimately, the sessions are more efficient. That said, how necessary is that when Skype's pretty fast and you can record your end on a WAV? So, yeah, I do 10% of my sessions on ISDN these days. The vast majority say, look, Dave, you can freestyle or we'll direct you over the phone.
And for people that are curious, can you ballpark the price that ISDN cost you to have that service at your local home studio over there?
Yeah, it's £24 a month. Maybe $40, maybe, I don't know, $35. But you can get it cheaper now. I know some people who are getting it via independent companies who are trying to undercut the national telecoms company over here.
Really?
And I think some people are getting it for like £15 or maybe £12 a month.
You're talking about, you've got the Zephyr. No, what's the...
Yeah, it's a Prima LT. It's like a purple thing. It looks like it was made by Willy Wonka.
So it's not Source Connect. It's not another digital alternative. It's literally ISDN for what amounts to maybe $40 a month.
Yeah, still haven't made the move over to Source Connect or that IPDTL, which apparently
it isn't the greatest algorithm.
I've now had this conversation with very good tech people, and it's just like any political issue. Everyone has their own opinion. Everyone thinks they're right, but they're all predicting the future, and I'm not ready to pull the trigger on anything myself.
Ultimately, we're not in the National Theatre here. We're making stuff for the radio, so it doesn't really matter that much.
Howard, let me switch back over to Howard. I don't want him to get lonely over there in his lavish country house. Tell me the system, because I actually already had the whole team from Capital on, but from your point of view, you know, how often are you voicing sessions for them? Do you go in there doing everything from your own studio? Do you ever hook up ISDN? How does that process work?
Yeah, we use ISDN all the time. There is no way that we would be able to do... I'm not a fan of ISDN either, like Dave, but there is no way we'd be able to get anything done without ISDN, because Chris, who's the head of production there, and some of the other guys, they drive you very, very hard, and which I like and I'm used to. And also, it's a laugh. Because, you know, the six or seven of you in the studio, and we spend most of the day just mucking about, and then we record stuff. That happens about 4 days a week. And then I go in about as often as Dave does. I try and go in more for the same reasons. Sometimes I get to record, but I'm going to be honest. I have a studio that Global have allowed me to use way back when we started negotiating. It's got the most beautiful selection of EQs that you could ever get, and you'd never get that in your studio without spending hundreds and hundreds of thousands. So I actually go in there to do it, a lot of their work, and certainly all of the big events they do with Jingle Bell Ball and so on, I have to have, it's just confidence really, I have to have the right mic, I have to have the right gear, I have to have the right sound in my ears to be able to play that character that they want.
There was a period for quite a while where I could not do a voiceover session unless my microphone was processed live. It took me years, possibly 5 years, to finally come to terms with delivering voiceover as opposed to presenting a radio show and hearing my voice automatically beefed up. I have no idea what was going on inside my head, but I would, if the microphone wasn't processed to a degree that no producer would tolerate, really, I could not deliver the right energy required. I'd like over deliver.
I agree with that. I'm glad you said that.
It was really weird. It got to the point where is there any chance? It's so high maintenance in hindsight. But my request was: is there any chance we can record this flat? But have you put a feed of the processor into my headphones? But clearly, I was right up my own ass back then.
Let me ask you about that then, because that's interesting. That comes up often, and I would say it's got to be 80-90% of all American imaging producers would prefer their voice to come completely colorless, you know, without any. Now, are you guys shipping when you're not doing your ISDN, or even when you are doing your ISDN, are you coloring your audio, or are you pretty much required to give them clean, un-EQ'd, uncompressed audio?
I send everybody the same dry slightly EQ'd system that I send to Capital. Capital have their own prioritized EQ chain, which they put on top of that. They sometimes share it with others, they sometimes don't. Southern Cross Austereo, David Konski, has a completely different EQ chain for me, and it sounds completely different in my head. But yeah, I don't send a flat signal for anything that is imaging for the same reasons as Dave said. Rather than being deliberately awkward, I think it just helps you. You're playing a part of a character, and anything you can do that will help you feel good doing that is advantageous. And it's this funny, because when I was on the radio, I was told off so many times by broadcast operators because I was the only broadcaster who would come in and sit with two engineers and get my EQ right. And they said, well, that's your ego. And I'm like, well, actually, no, if you think about it, it's really not. It's about A, fear, B, me wanting to do a better job for you, and C, you've got this equipment, let's use it. And why? Yeah. And D, why are all these other presenters not caring about how they sound? What's that about? So actually, I became quite proud of that.
Very quickly to interrupt, it probably still is beneficial if you're delivering very lightly, knowing that it will process up to the sound you can hear in your ear in post, means you know you're doing it right. It's a useful tool, but I've kind of had to sort of get used to not having that.
I actually do record for Capital from this studio, which is a very flat signal, as you can probably hear. This is the setting that I use for audiobooks and telly and narration. But also, it's really weird because when I do, sometimes I go in a studio and I use
U87?
Yeah. Now, call me inexperienced, but, you know, the program starts and you've got this music. And, you know, it says on the piece of paper, he was a man who'd only had one day to live. And all of a sudden, you sound like this in your ears. He was a man with only one day to live. Can we have some EQ? I mean, there's professional voiceovers from that go around the West End, and they spend most of their life in Soho. Hello, darling. Yeah, I've done 85 jobs today. Yeah. No, I'm just going to go and do some more. Yeah. EQ, what is that? What does that actually stand for? I'm so professional, I don't need it.
Yeah.
But they don't need it.
No.
And because they're delivering something completely different, something that sounds uber natural.
Yeah, no.
And something that a voice like mine that spent far too much time in a radio studio doesn't sound like. They're delivering often a much more human thing. That said, you said you're now doing audiobooks. How have you made that transition?
I've actually done two novels. I've done a human development book because I know a lot about that. So it's quite easy to do that. Do you know what? I think that if I put my EQ, I could put my EQ on now, actually. And if I put my EQ on now and tried to do the audiobook, it wouldn't feel right.
Yeah.
It's almost like if I put on the Capital headphones, then I have to be in that scene.
Yeah.
And if I put on the audiobook headphones, and I mean, and if you go to a television studio, you walk in the building, you know, Dave does Channel 5, he walks in that building and he's already there and he's already in character. When he gets behind the mic, it's quite good quality and everything.
Do you know
what? Seems to
that's right. I never thought of that. My on-air style, my broadcasting style, my voiceover style is completely different in that room compared to at home. It's like, I didn't think of the sort of subconscious change that takes place when you walk in that room, and it does sound, well, certainly very different to doing imaging, that's for sure.
I got a curiosity. If I'm watching like ITV and it's going between shows, you know, this show has just ended and the voice is coming on and telling me what's coming up next. Are those done live?
Well, they're not live in the States as far as I'm aware. Is that correct? They do sound more like bolted on promos.
Yeah.
In
so
the
here,
States.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks any of the announcements or promos, or like you said, bolted on promos are live. They just don't sound like it. They're all very produced and they're all, you know, you've got a smash screen, then an effect, and then when I'm watching some stuff from over there, it really is made to sound like the person is just sitting there waiting in the studio, and then, all right, finally, Downton Abbey's over. Let me tell everybody what's coming up next on ITV. All right, I'm done. I'll wait another 30 minutes before I come back on the mic.
That's exactly what it is for the main five or six channels, the two BBC ones, the ones that are sort of the heritage stations that have been around for years, still have this concept that I don't think is used in many countries around the world. And it is to, much like radio, to humanize the TV channel. And so it isn't delivered like a promo. It is delivered in a very casual, informal manner. It's meant to sound a bit like, you know, there is a DJ-style person here who is your mate, that old radio cliche. It's a luxury that TV stations here in the UK stick with. It is part of their brand. It is, yes, the brands have got to look cool. They've got to have their big flashy logos and their sexy graphics, etc. But a great way of coming to appear down to earth is by doing this live continuity announcing thing, which I do for Channel 5. Yet, to some ears, it may sound a bit old-fashioned, and it isn't absolutely essential, but it is part of humanizing the brand. And it's also very good for last-minute pointing people around schedule changes and sounding like you actually care about the program that's just been on.
It humanizes the network. Yeah. Certainly.
Yeah, so, yeah, we still do that. The rest of the channels, the vast majority of them, it's all pre-recorded.
Yeah. Let me take you down this path, because we've already gone so long and you guys are very generous with your time. And in fact, if either of you have to jump out, just say, all right, it's time, and I'll wrap it up. But at least one more. I thought this could be a cool topic, especially after talking to you. Each of you give me a specific career mistake you feel like you might have made along the way. It could be small, but something that you kind of go back and go, ooh, I shouldn't have done that.
Well, I enjoyed raving too much. So on a bit of a post-rave low, I walked into one of the biggest radio stations in London on the Tuesday, I think. That's how big the weekend was. The low kicked in on the Tuesday and just walked out of my job. And I was presenting an afternoon show on a very big, relatively large station, beginning with K. And that was a mistake because, yes, I technically could do more voiceovers, but it was a silly move because it kind of lowered my profile, which is no good for voice gigs. If you don't have any like acting ability to broaden your appeal, the only real sell is the fact that you are a presenter. So it was a double-edged sword loss.
I feel like if you're going to be a true entertainer, you have to torch a gig at some point in your life. You know, everybody from every level of the list probably does that.
I love that phrase, torching a gig. It's only an American can say that and get away with it. It sounds great.
Howard, anything to learn us?
Give me your worst. What was your worst one?
I think it'd be silly to say that I haven't made any mistakes because I've made loads and tons. Every single one I've paid for, every single time. And I think I've tried so hard not to make so many. They would have been, I think, before I was a voice, because I think I got into the level of doing voices to a reasonable standard later in my career rather than in my early 20s when you just act like a dick. I think it probably didn't go down too well when I was represented by somebody and I told them that I thought their daughter was quite pretty. My work suddenly dried up after that.
Oops.
Hey, you're not walking back from this one. Yeah.
There's that.
You stepped up to the plate there.
Thank you, Dave.
It's a good story, but also a good learning lesson. I don't care how well you know the person. Yeah, don't compliment the hotness of a daughter. It's not worth it.
The other thing I was going to say was, if I was going to give advice to anyone, I would say, don't feel sad or upset or depressed when you go and do a session and they ignore you afterwards, because that can be quite shocking. But it is something that you have to now... I mean, there's very little that can happen now that I wouldn't really expect to happen now.
Mm-hmm. That was the TV... I don't know if this is the case, but that sounds like the TV radio difference, which caused me a few problems when I was trying to break into voicing promos and didn't have any TV stuff. And sometimes a really slickly produced, overly produced radio reel will be, well, I think on this occasion, it was misinterpreted by the TV promo producer as something that would just leap from my mouth, as opposed to having 25 different types of compression squashed on top of it.
Right.
And it kind of gave a false impression of the kind of voice that I was, especially when you're voicing TV promos, it's a much purer job. It's kind of, you voice it live, there's not a huge amount added. The music is dipped in a pretty basic fashion underneath you, and that all helps make a much clearer product for the TV viewing stroke listening experience. But yeah, certainly caused a little confusion. I did my first TV promo. It went badly. I didn't do another one for 3 or 4 years.
All right, guys. Two more main things. I always like to get to at least with on top of the other hour plus worth of stuff we just discussed. These two things I like to chat up. Let's go into the studio just a little bit. You both have actually mentioned your EQ settings, your compression, the fact that you're very knowledgeable about, you know, which mic you're on and the difference it has. So if you wouldn't mind, pull back the curtain in whichever manner you're comfortable with. And maybe Dave, we'll start with you. You know, what are your favorite pieces of equipment in your studio? What do you need to have in order to feel your best in front of the mic?
I have to have the microphone at the right height, and I have to be able to see my script. That helps.
Do you know what? I saw Dave do a voiceover on YouTube while he was on a holiday. And, you know, that's just not acceptable. He was on a laptop covered with his quilt.
Whilst you have a comforter?
I was sitting in rainy London, I rang up the head office of where I work and I said, excuse me, please. If he's allowed to do voices from the beach in Dubai, then I will do the same. So don't let him pull any wool over your eyes.
I was in the dodgiest hostel in Uganda. I was doing some charity work.
Hey, David, let me interrupt because I was going to bring this up and we just never got around to it. But you did, I wanted to compliment you. You did one of the best presentations at the Imaging Days in Amsterdam. And there were pictures from this that Howard is speaking of. And I thought to myself, man, what voice artist hasn't been in that predicament where you're speaking into pillows with blankets over your head and rain? And anyway, tell us the story.
It would be a very self-indulgent coffee table book, but there's possibly, you know, 1,000 places to voice from.
Sure.
But, you know, it's not rocket science. It could sound a bit muddy. You wouldn't do it if you were recording a national TV campaign. But for a lot of promos that are going to have heavily affected voiceover, it doesn't really matter. You can just do it from wherever you like. But that said, the majority of the delivery needs to have a decent studio. My favorite piece of equipment is actually the piece of equipment that surprised me. After 4 years of owning this Onyx 820i mixing desk and having it connected to my laptop with the dodgiest sort of external sound card, which had loads of hum and hiss coming from the headphone jack, I suddenly pulled it back to discover it's got a bloody firewire, and it is indeed its own audio sound card. And for the last 3 months, the quality of what I've been delivering my clients has improved by 200%.
That's great.
It sounds bloody fantastic.
What kind of mic do you use?
It is a Neumann, but I don't know which Neumann it is.
103, maybe?
No, it's not. It was bloody expensive. I think it's a U87.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's usually the TLM-103 or the U87. And then if not, then you're a real mic geek.
It then goes into a Universal Audio LA610 Mark II.
Excellent.
Looks like it's jumped out of 1965.
Yes.
And the rest of it's on a MacBook. There you go.
Awesome. Howard, whatever you want to divulge, I know you said, you've already mentioned you worked out of a couple studios, but maybe, for example, where you're at right now.
I've got a Neve set up for processing a gate. I got Auralex room with Auralex in it where I'm sat now. I got a Drawma gate and compressor as well. I got a U87. I got an AT4040. I got a digital desk, a Yamaha with a USB sound card. So, and then my favorite is the Klotz desk. They have them at Global Radio. The Klotz desk has got digital amps, and then there is this magic box with this ridiculous EQ, which I've had put into lots of studios around the country. That's really bad, but I feel comfortable. So they've all got this little digital preset. It's Howard's preset. So when, if I go to Nottingham, I just press that button. And if they've got the same desk, then I can sound the same in all of those. And some of the time, some of the work that I can do, I can sort of bolt onto that studio. And sometimes I do it from here. So it's a varied equipment regime.
Yeah. I've just recently discovered a plugin which has proved very handy in Adobe Audition. Everyone's probably already got it, but it's a revelation for me. It's Waves De-Breath. There we go. It gets rid of all the breaths.
Oh, yeah.
It's bloody handy. I can tell you, you can see them just disappear as soon as you apply this thing. And then I feel very happy and I can send my audio.
Great. So what about, let's see here, just real quick, Mac, PC, Pro Tools, Audition. I already heard, Dave, you said Audition. You guys both Mac guys, I believe?
I'm just on a MacBook Air.
Doesn't everyone use a Mac now?
You'd be surprised at how many do not.
Use a Mac. Yeah. Really?
Yeah, well, you know, I was one of those that was anti-Mac for a long time. I produced in Pro Tools on a PC environment, but it was probably, I mean, now it's 10 years ago, I guess. Maybe when I moved over, like, you don't really realize it, until you do it, the benefits of it, you know. It's not...
Mm. Did you torch Pro Tools?
No. I'm Pro Tools 100%. I'll never stray. Although I do like to dabble in like Ableton Live.
Really?
I will open up Audition now and again when I'm trying to help somebody else do something in Audition. I got this little utility called Fission on a Mac, which is really cool for some extremely fast editing like I used to do on my Cool Edit. I'd always have Cool Edit installed on my PC.
Wow, you're properly on it, aren't you? You're properly on it.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a nerd.
Well, this use of Adobe Audition is just a hangover from Cool Edit when I used to produce on that.
Yeah.
Of course, it's virtually the same thing, isn't it? And I don't know, just a bit lazy, and my hands are permanently tuned to the shortcuts of that and not Pro Tools. I've never made the transition, but I prefer it, strangely.
Okay, I think on that note, I have to cut ourselves off because we could probably go for hours and hours. So anyway, let me just quickly say... being very serious and honest, that I highly respect the both of you. Howard, I know I will meet you in person at some point. I'll be back over in Europe next year, or actually late this year. And David, great to talk to you again. But anyway, I think you both are extremely genuine. I think a top trait to have to be a huge success at what you know you do is to just be unique, to be genuine, and you both are that. Thank you all so very much.
Thank you, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan, lovely talking to you. Thanks for having us.
One more time, I shall say a heartfelt thank you to Howard Ritchie and David Wartnaby. They both were amazing. They both were very generous with their time, and I very much appreciate them being on the show with me. Quickly onto the intranet, you can get Howard Ritchie at howardritchie.com. That's RITCHIE.com, howardritchie.com. Dave's site, I think his official site is voiceovermail.co.uk. He probably has multiple sites, but really both of them, as I've mentioned, I think a few times, they are legit talent. They have that nice British aw shucks stuff going on, you know, much humility, but they're big time. Google search them both. You'll see lots of content if you want to see all that is their careers. So David Wartnaby, W-A-R-T-N-A-B-Y, though you're probably reading it on the name of this podcast, and Howard Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E. Anything else to mention? I can tell you that I am interviewing Anthony Gay, somebody I wanted to talk to for a while, to totally switch gears. I do like to switch gears every once in a while. Anthony Gay, that interview actually should be conducted extremely soon from now, although... there's always editing, there's usually delays, there's most of the time problems. So, don't count on the episode to be posted for at least a few weeks. But I do promise, now that the holidays have passed, I'm not going to wait 6 weeks in between episodes. No more than a month, hopefully 3 weeks, that's always my goal. About 3 weeks between episodes, maybe a month. But anyway, lots of people to talk to. I've been extremely British, though. Very England-y. Because I had the two monstrous talents from the UK, then Anthony Gay, who is the, by the way, managing director of Real World Europe, if I didn't already say that. And then near future, I actually will most likely slide a couple few Americans or non-British people in, because while I love my friends in the UK, I don't want to make this podcast all Britishy or too Britishy. Anyway, my two buddies, Tom Cross and Adam Burgess, I've now officially met them in person, though it's one of those deals where you email constantly for, not constantly, but you email for years and years, and you've actually never seen the people. So those guys, I'll have another tag team episode, and they are taking America by storm with Imaging Blueprint. They are Contraband Media, if you're aware of that, over there in Europe. They are all over the place, high-level production, very, very high-level production. two very nice producers, but very skilled. So we should learn a lot when that episode comes. But again, we have some other Americans on the list. I just haven't locked anything else in yet. But as I said, I'll only promote when I've officially hard locked the guest in and all of those people I mentioned I have. Okay, enough from me for now. Until next time, thank you so much for checking it out. Bye.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.